Coffee and Cream on Hale Varsity Radio with Andrew Rogers and Damon Benning.
Astros left fielder with the bases loaded. Pitch on the way, and Jolks belts it deep to left field, and you can kiss that one goodbye. A grand slam for Corey Jolks, and the Astros have jumped out to a 6-0 lead.
Manny at first, one out, no score in the second inning, and Sanchez lines one to deep left. Haps back, he watches, gonna go! Two-run homer, Gary Sanchez.
Here's the pitch. It's hit on the left side and through. A base hit into left field. Simeon around third. Here's the throw from Donovan. It's offline. Simeon scores. And the Rangers walk off the Cardinals in the opening game of this series. The final score, 4-3.
Stevenson steers it across. Marcisseau, and he shoots. He scores! Marcisseau! Play goal! 1-0 Golden Knights. Jonathan Marchessault. Power play goals in consecutive games. Vegas beating through center on the right side. Carrier gains the zone with Emmanuel. Touch pass and a shot. Score! Brett Howden, second in the game. It's a power play goal. 7-2 Golden Knights. 2:08 to go, third period. Maturity pays off. The Golden Knights will take a 2-0 series lead in the Stanley Cup Final.
Hey, good morning. Coffee and Cream in the morning on Hale Varsity Radio, powered by Currency. Damon Benning, Andrew Rogers. Well, it wasn't a shutout, which I believe it was. We were talking about like 6-0, maybe it was 7-0 when Vegas decided, we're gonna move on. Mm. We're gonna be the ones that are represented in the Stanley Cup Final. But it was 7-2. So DB, you made the comparison to football, like, oh, when you win this big, it's like winning 56-0 in football. What's a 7-2 win in hockey?
That is Minnesota 1983. That is an 84-point scoring explosion from Rozier, Gill, and
Fryer.
That's 7 in hockey is, that's about 84 points in football. No, I mean
that's a lot. It's a lot of points.
So at the end, when it was 2-0 at the end of one, you're thinking, you felt like Florida had missed some opportunities. But then, Shane, it turned into your girl, Stevie Nicks, mad about her husband.
Landslide.
Oh, yeah. Turned into the
brought
proverbial.
You down.
Yeah. You took their love and you took it down. Climbed a mountain and you turned around. And I saw your reflection.
They need to see their own reflection because right now Florida.
Yeah.
They're looking into the ocean right now and thinking, like, where am I?
Total man in the mirror
brushing
moment.
The water.
But they held serve at home. Now the Panthers, they got to go back to the house and regroup. You got to be a lot more disciplined.
They're in their own head.
You are not winning any 50-50 pucks. I sent you the graphic last night of your boy.
Petrangelo.
Leading
or as
all players.
Gosh, who was it in my own family? Was it my mom that
Petrangelo?
I believe somebody said Petrango one time, and that became an ongoing joke.
Yeah.
In
and just getting every loose puck. So it's a lot going on. A lot going on, but your Panthers get it. You know, they left the Heat for dead, too, after game one. So will they leave?
That's true.
Will they leave the Panthers for dead
down
after
2-0?
Two? Yeah. Mm. And remember, the series doesn't start till you win one on the road.
Eventually, they're going to win one there. I mean, they haven't yet, ever, but eventually they are.
Yeah, you're right, Shane. They are 7-0 all time in Vegas.
Law of averages. So the one of the coolest things last night, I saw that it's weird where my mind goes. But, Shane, could you believe Wayne Newton can still crank that thing for the start of – How old is Wayne Newton?
He's got to be like 85. I'm
take
guessing.
A guess.
87.
I will. He's older than that, isn't he? No. He's probably 84.
81.
So how much money has Wayne Newton given his docs?
A lot.
Had to have. Like,
I mean, he looks like David Hasselhoff.
His hair looks like if the wind picked up. it may all blow off. Mm-hmm. It's the wrong color. It's not even...
His face may blow off, too.
Dude, that thing is stretchy. How much collagen is in that?
No big deal.
I mean, all
he doesn't
that,
have a wrinkle. He doesn't have a wrinkle on his forehead.
Wrinkles.
Mm-hmm.
But he was cranking that bad boy. I was like, "Go, Wayne."
I didn't. You know, I felt like after I hurt myself yesterday doing these mag shift cleans with dumbbells, I'm like, man. At what point
do I toss the towel?
Do I just not want to be athletic, or at least relatively?
I can't think of a time.
I don't know if that's ingrained in you.
Then I watched Wayne Newton crank that thing like Soldier Boy.
Watch me roll. Watch me crank that Soldier Boy. That's
so
Superman.
I was like, you know what? This raggedy ankle will heal up. I'll continue to hobble around. It was funny, too, because I picked my shoes very carefully this morning. You know, I don't like to repeat a ton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I went with borderline slippers today.
Yes, because I had asked you. These were the first pair of shoes I asked you about when I first met you.
I wanted to give myself the sense that I was walking without shoes.
Like, DB, it looks like your toes are about to come right through
the
shoe.
They're super stretchy. So I went with these bad boys, but I was like, you know what? I feel kind of motivated.
Mm-hmm. That thing wet?
Yeah, that thing is wet, like Gabe Vincent's jumper. Butter. That was weird.
Not Max Strus?
No. My thing about Strus, his expressions. Strus looks like one of those guys that would be for hire if you wanted to knock somebody off and you needed a sniper. You know, like you see those contract killers in movies?
Hitmen.
He looks like Max Strus. So I'm like,
can you imagine a film with him as the lead?
But you know what I mean? They always have like those random. He looks like one of the guys. He looks like one of the guys that was part of the team in Equalizer 2. You know, the little ops crew. Strus could be in that, or maybe be the accountant like Ben Affleck was, or somebody like that. Maybe be like an adversary to Jack Reacher.
Somebody that just walks the sidewalk without anybody really
looks
knowing
like a,
who
looks
you are.
Looks like a regular kind of a little pretty boy, mm-hmm. but not really.
Ends up being a man with a special set of skills.
Yeah.
Skills that would make him a nightmare.
Exactly. That
for
would
people
be,
like you.
That would be Max Strus. So between that and being captivated by Nebraska's camping situation, crazy offers. Michael Burt, the most recent from Prep, who I'm telling you, I'll revisit this again after about week three. Right now, I'm tempted to say he's the best tight end prospect in the state.
I believe I've heard that once or twice.
Yeah, I've said this, right? So this isn't new coming from me. And I said this before. He didn't even have an offer.
Right, because it – Sauter threw out another name, too.
And I go, I had to tell him, I said, Burt's a stud, you know, but he came on late.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a better second half of the season than the first half. But when you talk about, like, upside and kind of his frame, I don't. So the difference right now, so I'll give you the difference between the three, between Ingerson, Burt, and Stein at Grand Island Northwest, and Carter Nelson. Ingerson is the biggest, right? He's a legit 6'6 mm-hmm. and some change. I would guess he's somewhere in the 235, 40-ish range. Maybe. I should probably ask his dad. His thing is playing at 45 degrees bursts. Like, where is his... And this is good. He doesn't have to be like foot speed fast because that's not my thing. Just change of direction like snap. So that's his thing.
245.
So Burt is got good bend. I think he can get vertical on you. He looks like kind of a future tight end because I don't think he's going to outgrow his frame. Eric's going to have to try to not outgrow his frame.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of frame to work with. So he's going to have to eat a certain way, train a certain way. I mean, because he could wake up one day and his metabolism slows down. And I know that's what he's not
a big fan of because everybody talks about potential offensive line. He doesn't want to be an offensive lineman. He needs to be a tight end.
He wants to catch the ball.
Yeah, and he waits for – I mean, Narduzzi fires off that tweet. He's still in – he hasn't even left yet. He's still in Pittsburgh. And, listen, I don't get into that. I mean, it's fine. Coaches control one another. It appears that Rule and Narduzzi have not gotten over the Kenny Pickett recruiting at Temple, but in Pitt, which is a mm-hmm. great backstory. Mm-hmm. Carter Nelson is, again, another upside guy, but mm-hmm. there's lots I don't know. I don't know about, you know, the willingness to bang and hang in there, inline blocking, handling good rush ins. Like, that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Really good athletic potential.
You know, that like that's a thing because he's not fast enough to be a wide receiver. But he could grow into a good size mm-hmm. tight end. And I don't know, like, maybe you flex him out. Right now I would be a smidge worried about him being a traditional in-line guy. So you have to get creative on how to use him. You know, H-back, motion him, maybe use him as an inside three. He has probably the most tools in his tool bag if you want to get creative.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stein is probably just a little bit behind those guys at GI Northwest just because he doesn't – I don't see the projection down the road. But that's four tight ends.
In-state.
With a ton of offers. And I was joking with one of our local guys who coincidentally doesn't really cover recruiting – per se, but probably pays the most attention to what goes into recruiting. Like, he's probably the most thoughtful, right? There's some other guys that actually cover it for a living that he should put his brain in their body. Then they'd actually be good at their job. But it's too petty for a Tuesday, isn't it?
No, never.
There's this circle. We were going through DMs, and some of these guys just have no clue. It's sad. It's sad. But anyway, so when Iowa first offered, my initial response was, I went right back to the Sam Laporta story. Sam Laporta was on a panel in Iowa City, and the players were talking. And sometimes people roll their eyes, and they want to follow recruiting, but they don't want to actually know how recruiting works. So if you tell a story about another school, you know, the more mature you are, the more you can listen mm-hmm. and take some information away, because knowledge is power, right? You can't operate in a vacuum and not know and be like, well, they're not going to Brad, whatever. Right, I like to learn. So I'm listening to Laporta tell this story. And Iowa didn't offer him until December of that year's cycle. They told him he was going to be the fourth tight end. He was mad. Went there anyway. Sat for a little bit. Now the guy's in the league, right? Good job. So I immediately thought, and I told this individual, I said, that's interesting. I said, the guys that are recruiting him at that camp know the tight end position. They have 55 comps. 55 mm-hmm. comps that have been in the league where they can look and see.
Iowa's been there, done that.
Right?
And
he's right in front of them. So I said, oh, this is going to be interesting. This was darn near in the middle mm-hmm. of the day. Okay? And I said, because they don't, there's some positions that they recruit where they just don't miss. They don't miss.
And recruits realize that?
And so I said, ooh, I said, I'm surprised because they're not usually premature. Iowa didn't offer Tyson Terry until a month ago. Right? I mean, they just bagged double-digit offers. Mm-hmm. They didn't offer Terry until a month ago. So they take their time. They're not going to, like, rush all in. And by the time I closed my eyes last night, and we knew I knew Nebraska was coming. It was just slow to tweet that out because by the time the tweet came out, I think Nebraska had offered a couple hours ahead of that. But Minnesota was in the middle of that. So he had like three offers in like 6 hours. And I felt like that was one of those offers where people were going to be like, ooh, there's only a few schools that if they offer at a certain position,
right,
everybody else is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
one of them with tight ends.
And I just remember Laporta telling that story about how late he was offered in the cycle. December of his senior year. And they told him to chill, you're going to be the fourth tight end. They offered Burt relatively, and I know he's thinking, early? Man, this is my senior year. Don't worry, big fella. We watch you on film a ton. We know where you're at. But it just could get interesting for him. So add that to the list of Power 5 guys in the next two cycles that will be coming out of the state in the fourth tight end. It's a lot, man.
When you said Laporta being the four, like, you know, oh, you get offered in December. Like, am I going to actually, like, do this? Like, I'm, as you said, I'm a little perturbed he came at me. Like,
he was mad
later than
he
I
was mad
I felt
his
I
whole
was,
career.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But notice who stays where, right? Because you win.
So do you know
you
what
win
he was,
at that position.
You know what he was telling all the guys? And one, it didn't work with because he ended up decommitting last minute and going to Bama to play O-line. But he's like, these guys, he said it, the good and the bad, it just depends on your maturity.
Mm-hmm.
He said they'll tell you exactly what you need to know. You just have to be prepared to handle it. And you listen, some of these guys are 16, 17. They're sitting in this room, just players,
right.
no coaches around. It's
stargazing
like,
a little bit.
Like, man, what the world does that mean? Well, it means exactly what he said. They'll tell you exactly. Like, I'll tell you.
There's no hidden meaning.
You know what my dad used to tell me? And this is weird. No disrespect. I'm not necessarily comparing Coach Rule to you, but he said, my dad used to always say, don't ask me a question you don't want to know the answer to. He would always say that. You know who else mm-hmm. like that? Coach Rule. Don't ask him a question that you don't want to know.
But in the same light, ask a question and don't feel like you're asking a dumb question.
Because you have to be able to handle what comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to operate in the know, right? It doesn't matter if you like me, if you don't like me. Well, so, hey, listen, you say it like that. Some people don't want to know. Some people aren't built to handle the criticism that comes with operating in the know. It's like people say, oh, man, I want to be like the guy on what women want. Actually, you probably don't. Not everybody's built like that.
You don't want to hear those thoughts?
No, not. Listen, we all know the guy or gal that they get 9 compliments and the 10th is not, and it's the killer.
Uh-huh.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, not everybody's built like that. And so I think it's interesting, and it just kind of lets you know. I compared it immediately when I was talking to a couple of my buddies. I immediately compared it to the Rezac situation. So a guy kind of is flying under the radar. The A school offers, and then all of a sudden he's on everybody's radar when the kid's been there the whole time. It's such a funny, fickle business.
Well, a lot of
which is why those guys are busting their butt in Texas, and you know, we knew the guys that he was leaving behind to supervise the team visits, who was going to Texas, like how strategic it was. But I mean, they're trying to scour the areas just to get eyes on as many things as they can, so they're operating in the know. But while the cat's away, the mice will play. So you didn't get a chance to get a couple of those guys on campus this weekend, so other schools get to offer first. You just have to be willing to deal with that. Like, you can't – it happened with Ingerson. It's now it's happened with Burt. You can't be afraid to get outside of how you typically do business and rush. And so – and I'm saying this to recruits, too, and parents. You can't take it personal. But I do know.
A lot
know,
of times it's just timing.
But, oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. And I know people want to raise their hand and say, hey, I'm here. I'm really good. I can play.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with a lot of coaches, they see a lot better than they hear. Although in this recruiting business, there are a lot of rabbit ears. Coaches hear things and staffs hear things, and then all of a sudden it's – there are a couple schools you know, I remember with Teddy specifically, that even once Notre Dame offered, and I'm like, hey, I'm pretty sure this was coming. I just, you know, like they just were here again. And there are still some schools that, like, give me pushback, like, hey, man, I wish them the best. We just didn't see it. Right? Because maybe he didn't have that kind of workout for right. them. And then they go back and look at the tape. So it's a very, very, very fickle business. It's a hard science. And the more I watch it, the more I think I have a decent handle on it. Because now I'm watching this.
And you're
like,
in the scene.
Well, now I'm closer to it than ever. Before, I was just basing it on, okay, what I could do, what I've seen other people do, what's my basic baseline for a barometer to get you to Power 5. Then I fast forward. Do they have what I think it takes to play at the Power 5 level in terms of their emotional maturity? Can they endure? Can they handle bad days? What's their 70% look like? Then I look at things like that, and I just look at overall upside. Because sometimes guys aren't there yet, and they're closer to finished products than not. So that used to be what I would always go on. And it was pretty – I felt like it was pretty right. accurate. Now it's even – now I maybe know too much, so it clouds my judgment. You know what I mean? Because I've heard, you know, 30 schools. Mm-hmm. I get a chance – I know their philosophy. And I'm like, well, I know why you win. Ooh, I know why you don't win. I could see how you could get there. You probably need some help and hope your development's good. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So now I'm calculating all that.
You're invested.
It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
You know, a lot of times when you're telling this story of timing when it comes to when you're getting an offer, when you're not, how people take certain things personally, it makes me think of the TV show The Voice, right?
This ought to be good.
You're a country singer on stage. Well, sometimes the coach that's a country singer, in this situation, Blake Shelton, takes a little bit longer to turn his chair. He's watching. He's listening to every note. He's trying to make sure you can hit that high note, reach your true potential on stage, see where he can coach you. He's thinking about all these things before he turns his chair. Meanwhile, Kelly Clarkson or whoever else, who's not a country singer, turns because they hear the rawness in your voice. They hear the soul. They're like, I want to beat Blake to the punch. Mm-hmm. So just because they're trying to beat Blake doesn't mean that other people aren't still listening, taking notes, and it may just take them a little bit longer because they know how to perfect you better.
It's one of the things that we talked about with Brady yesterday. Patience. You know, the patience thing. Because right now, and we'll get into this, right? We heard about, like, how busy we know how busy June is. Mm-hmm. And how, looking forward to July and ramping up the cycle and then kind of chilling, but getting together with his guys. Remember how he talked about being a community guy, a man in the community. I want to be in the community. We talked about it yesterday. And then coincidentally, he drops the little nugget to Sip yesterday about camping and dorming.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about that too.
Listen, a lot in there. You may roll your eyes, but we'll also be able to equate it to kind of what we've been talking about the last 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Checkmate in 9. And I mean that. We'll be back.